This is a recording for Jeff Bale with the Washington Office on Latin America on November 21st, 2013 at 12 p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Chris Mucino. Please begin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm Cristian Mucino Wallace, Communications Director. And I'm here with Jeff Sale, Wallace Director of Programs, and Adriana Beltran, Wallace Senior Associate for Citizen Security. Adriana just came back from traveling Honduras, and both their expertise on Central America and security is particularly relevant for this call, given that security crisis in that country. Jeff and Adriana will give a brief presentation, and then we'll open it up for questions. As the moderator said, you can ask a question by dialing star 1. So now I will turn it over to Jeff, who will start by explaining the importance of these elections and the issues at stake.
Thanks, Christelle. It's Jeff Dale. I'm the program director at WOLA. I just want to take a few minutes initially to talk a little bit about sort of the broad context of why these elections matter and are important, a little bit about the elections themselves, the potential for a close vote, and the dangers of possible fraud or claims of fraud, and then finally a little bit about the candidates. And then, you know, as Christelle said, for us, the sort of immediate issue of the elections and the aftermath of the vote is really inscribed in this larger context of the big crisis in both the economy and security in Honduras, and Adriana will pick up from me and talk about that. So just quickly, I mean, you know, these elections matter a lot, and they matter in Honduras, and they matter actually to the U.S. as well. They matter because they're the first elections after the 2009 coup, and they will test whether post-coup Honduras has really reestablished working democratic and representative institutions, and whether they can carry out an election more or less freely and fairly. Secondly, these are really important elections because this is the first time in a century in which someone other than the Liberal Party or the National Party is a serious contender for the elections. And that means for the last 100 years, every presidential election, the leading candidate has either been a Liberal or a National. The two parties have alternated in power, and they've dominated the political system. And what we've seen is the emergence. There are now 9 parties running. 4 of them are probably reasonably serious. And interestingly, the Libre Party, whose coordinator is Mel Zelaya, the deposed former president, and whose candidate is Xiomara Zelaya, the wife, Xiomara Castro de Zelaya, the wife of the former president, they are the other leading force. And so what that really means, you know, is that the whole Honduran political system is going through a significant shift. So these elections are important for that reason. Connected to that, these are the first elections in Honduran history, recent Honduran history at least, in which a left-of-center candidate is a serious challenger, and that's a new development. The elections are important for the United States. They're important because for the U.S., stability in Central America, where insecurity and drug trafficking have been real problems, is an important issue. They're important for the U.S. because there are a lot of questions raised about what position the U.S. took on the coup itself and what position they took vis-a-vis the political candidates in 2009 and in the aftermath of the coup. And this will really show and will really test U.S. impartiality and U.S. neutrality. And you know, the other day in a speech, Secretary Kerry said that reiterated that the Monroe Doctrine is over. It was the big applause line he got. And I think this election will test whether that's, in fact, actually true. So that's sort of the background. On the elections themselves, I mean, as I said, so there are 9 candidates. Xiomara Castro de Zelaya from the Libre Party is one of the leading candidates. Juan Orlando Hernandez from the National Party, the heir apparent to the current president, is the other leading candidate. And then there's There's six or seven others, including a Liberal Party candidate and an anti-corruption party candidate. All the polls show that this election is going to be very close. Polling, they stopped permitting polling in the last in the week running up to the election, so we don't have the latest numbers. But last week, Juan Orlando had picked up a little bit, was leading Xiomara, but all within the margin of error. So it's going to be a very close election. Whoever wins, because there's so many candidates, is going to win only by a plurality of votes, and that means the winner is going to win with 32, 33, maybe 34% of the vote, but a clear minority president, and that'll be a big challenge. They're also going to elect the entire National Assembly, and traditionally the Assembly, like the presidency, is either liberals or nationals or both. This year we'll have nine parties in it, and the political coalitions are going to be very complicated. So there's a whole set of tensions and issues there. The result of how close the electoral contest is that the electoral period, it's very tense. It comes in the context of a persistent pattern of human rights abuses since the coup. Journalists, especially 22 or 23 journalists, have been killed in Honduras in the last 3 years. Lesbian and gay activists, community activists. There have been a range of human rights abuses and very little ability to investigate. There have been attacks on candidates of every political party, although there have been more attacks against Libre Party candidates. And so Libre has expressed fear about intimidation in the pre-electoral climate. The National Assembly approved, at the request of Juan Orlando Hernandez, the Assembly President and the candidate for next President of Honduras, approved the deployment of special militarized police units, and they are heavily armed. They're often masked. They're out in the streets, and there are concerns about the intimidation there. So it's a very tense pre-electoral climate. And kind of where that leads us is that concerns about fraud in the election itself. Historically, fraud has taken place in Honduras. Polls suggest Hondurans are worried about fraud. And if there's a close election, which I think there will be, the danger that one side or the other will raise concerns about fraud is very real. The Honduran TSC has certainly made a lot of progress in voter security compared to previous elections. They brought scanners in from Guatemala to be able to send results from most polling places in a reliable manner to the election center. There are about 700 international observers. The biggest group is the EU with about 90 observers, and then the Carter Center and the OAS and some others. So there's progress on combating fraud and fraud perception. But, no matter what, I think if the election is close, they're going to be the dangerous. People are going to raise that concern. Once the results are in, I think what we're going to see, especially in a close election, is potential for pressure or trouble on one side or the other. Sectors of the right, sectors of the military, sectors of the elite, ousted Mel's Lie in 2009. I think the big question, if Xiomara Castro comes in first, whether and how they'll respond to that. And then on the flip side, the base of the Libre Party believes that their candidate was thrown out, anti-democratically in 2009, and they will be restless if Xiomara Castro loses. So it's potentially a very tense situation no matter who wins. It will require calm on all sides, and it will require support from the observers and others in the international community to kind of get through the immediate post-election period. Once you get a government in place, the two leading candidates, Hernandez and Castro, do have very different programs on the economy, on security, on whether or not they're going to have constituent assembly, and on foreign policy, although actually on foreign policy, sometimes that one is portrayed as sort of left versus right, ALBA versus the United States, and it's probably an oversimplistic characterization. But, the two sides do have different programs and will have different implications whoever wins the election. in terms of governance and moving forward. But I think kind of the sort of final point to make really is that whoever wins, Honduras faces huge and ongoing challenges in terms of the economy and in terms of the crisis of crime and insecurity. And no matter who wins the presidency, that is going to be, Honduras has an enormous foreign debt. They're one of the poorest countries in the hemisphere. Growth has been stagnating. So they'll face a series of economic problems. Whoever wins, they'll probably have to turn to the IMF pretty early on, whoever wins. And they'll face a huge problem with insecurity, weakness of state institutions, and corruption. And I guess on that note, I will turn it over to Adriana.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Adriana, and I coordinate WOLA's Citizen Security Program. As Jeff just mentioned, one of the challenges that will confront whoever wins the elections on Sunday is insecurity. As many people know, Honduras has one of the highest homicide rates in the world. According to the Observatory of the National University, Honduras ended last year with a homicide rate of 85.5 per 100,000 citizens. The government, unfortunately, has been unable to really curb this rate of violence and insecurity. And I would say that it is likely to end this year with a rate, a similar rate, and if there's any kind of drop, it's related more to the size of the population than to the policies of the government. The situation is even more worrisome if you start looking at it by departments or on a more local level. You have departments such as Atlantida or Cortes that have homicide rates over 120 per 100,000 citizens. And, you know, just to put it into context, the average homicide rate in Latin America is 23 per 100,000 inhabitants, and the global average is 8. So you have, you know, a very, very dire situation. You know, besides the issue of crime and insecurity and violence, as Jeff, you know, highlighted, it's the question of the weak institutions. You have a police force that is highly corrupt and deeply infiltrated by organized crime. This is not a problem, you know, that is just one of petty bribes or of police officers turning a blind eye, you know, to drug shipments, but reports after reports of police officers and even high-level police officers that are implicated and even directing organized criminal activities and extrajudicial executions. The problem goes beyond the police. You have similar issues confronting the other criminal justice institutions, the public prosecutor's office, the judiciary. In June, just to highlight an example, the former attorney general and the deputy were forced to resign amidst accusations of irregularities and internal corruption after having admitted that the public prosecutor's office was only able to investigate, and this is investigate, not even fully prosecute, 20% of homicides. Much of this has to do with the lack of budget, but also a question of internal corruption. A new attorney general was appointed following, unfortunately, a process that lacked any, you know, serious degree of transparency and oversight. And even shortly after he was appointed, they started transferring public prosecutor's office from the human rights unit that have raised concerns about what is going to happen, you know, to cases of that involve human rights violations and police corruption. So this extends, you know, to the different institutions. Unfortunately, as I said, there hasn't been sufficient progress in trying to clean up the police and trying to strengthen the institutions. And this is a situation that that the next president is going to have to confront. And with that, I think I'm going to end it and, you know, turn it over to the operator so we can start the Q&A.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Our first question comes from Tim Johnson with the McClatchy newspaper. Tim Johnson, your line is now open.
Yes. Okay, hi, Jeff. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yep.
Let me ask two questions. The first one is basically, is this Honduran political system in which the first past the post, is this actually leading to more instability? Because, as you said, whoever wins is likely to have, what, only a third of the voting electorate as a mandate. The second question is, let me just get another question here. Is the fact that there's such a crisis in Venezuela ameliorating the possibility of greater tensions in Honduras? In other words, if Xiomara Castro wins, is she less inclined to be swayed by Venezuela?
Thanks, Kim. Those are good questions. But on the first one, the Honduran, I think the simple answer is yes, the way the electoral system is currently constructed, it will contribute the instability. The electoral system was constructed at a time when there are only two parties, and so first past the post means a majority in that case is pretty straightforward. It wasn't constructed to adapt to a new system, which is what's emerged in the last few years, where there are, right now there are 9 parties and at least 4 pretty serious ones. So I think the system hasn't been updated to sort of address the current and kind of changing political reality in the country. And there are some discussions ongoing, I think, about making modifications to do a second round in the next presidential elections in 5 years. On the second question, let me say 2 different things about that. One, the simple answer is Venezuela's own challenges kind of change other dynamics in the region and in Honduras in particular. I don't want to say that, I think that the Libre Party is a fairly complicated coalition, and it's certainly not it includes dissident liberals, it includes people who've been in previous governments in El Salvador, in Honduras, it includes people who kind of consider themselves left of center but social democrats, so it's certainly not all fanatical Chavistas. That's one thing to say. That said, it's clear that the Libre Party would have somewhat different foreign policy orientation, and that its relationship both with the ALBA countries and with the United States would be different than the orientation of if Juan Orlando wins. Again, I don't think that's to say that they're going to fall arm in arm and embrace it, but it will be a somewhat different relationship. The fact that Venezuela faces its own internal challenges, I think, makes nearly everyone in the region think that the ALBA coalition and the sort of vision of a polar Latin America with one set of countries and parties on the side of the United States and the other set on the side of Venezuela. And most people, I'm not sure that was ever quite true, but I think people see that as a less likely scenario just because the ALBA coalition, the Venezuelan government, their income and their own economy are a lot weaker than they were. So long answer to your question, but yes.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press *1 now. Our next question comes from Sarah Matthews. She's a freelancer.
Hi, yes. I was wondering, if Juan Orlando wins, what do you think his strategy will be for confronting the security crisis? And, if the U.S. and the international community should support this strategy?
Thank you. That's a great question. Juan Orlando, I would say, policies with regards to security is basically a continuation of what we've seen in the current Lobo administration, particularly the reliance on the military for law enforcement purposes. We've seen time and time again the government calling the security, the military, onto the streets. Most recently, I would say, Juan Orlando was the champion of creating the military police, which is comprised of about 5,000 troops that are already on the streets. He has said and recently presented a bill before Congress to ensure that the continuation of this body and to ensure that it's not dismantled in the next administration. So I would say that, everything will lead us to believe that he is going to continue relying on the military for citizen security purposes. I would say that in terms of the U.S., I would think that, if he were to continue relying on the military, that they ought to, take a step back and really, put into doubt how the U.S. can can cooperate with an administration that is, time and time again, relying more and more on the military for law enforcement purposes.
Thank you. We are now holding for questions. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. There are no more questions at this time.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for joining the call. We're here at WOLA. Actually, my cell phone is going to be on the homepage. If you guys need to reach me over the weekend, I'm happy to try to set interviews for you. And, yes, thank you so much. Have a great day. Thank you.
Everyone. Okay.
Thank you,
bye.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Bye.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines.